tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 8th of September, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we had some good news yesterday from Germany. We heard that the Alternative for Deutschland won a massive majority, 44.5%, in one of the former East German lands. I think it is Saxony, actually Saxony-Anhalt in Germany. And of course, this is quite remarkable when you bear in mind all the state repression that has gone on here, where they've literally, some regions refused to even put them on the ballot. You've had the intelligence services saying that they break the German constitution because they're not a liberal democracy party. They're a civic nationalist party. So it's quite remarkable that they have won this. They're saying it falls short of a majority, but I guess that's because it's not over 50%, but it's certainly the majority. They are the ones that won more votes than any other party in that part of the country. So certainly very good news. And it does show that it can be done. And of course, talking about that today, we're going to be talking about our own version of the Alternative for Deutschland, which is, of course, Restore Britain. I think Restore Britain are further to the right, actually, than the Alternative for Deutschland. The Reform Party are closer to Alternative for Deutschland. And, of course, over the weekend, the Reform Party held their conference, and they had Jordan Bardello there from the Front National, or the Front Rassemblement, or whatever the National Front call themselves now, in France, and they're also doing very, very well. And I mean, they say this every time in France. They say, well, the Front National are leading in the polls. But when it comes down to the voting, all these other parties, they form coalitions in order to prevent the Front National from actually winning. But they are saying that they actually do stand a good chance of winning this time. So, and if Reform win as well, then you would have had the meeting between the Prime Minister of France and the Prime Minister of Britain in waiting, making a deal about these migrants, the illegal immigrants, to send them back to France. So politically, things are looking good, I think. They're looking up. Anyway, let's get back into Restore Britain's philosophy of national belonging, which is essentially their paper talking about citizenship and ethnicity and what they propose to do to solve some of the problems that we have in Britain. And we got up to page 4 yesterday. English identity can be shared more broadly, while England's historic population remains a distinct subject of demographic security. So saying that England's historic population, the English people, have to have demographic security. This is effectively what PA say. They say that Britain needs to go back to being 95% majority British in order for the British people to have some demographic security. And he says, that's Rupert Lowe, says the same principle applies across the United Kingdom. So that applies for every ethnic nation, the Welsh, the Scottish, the English, and the Northern Irish. He says the distinction matters because pretending that historic peoples do not exist makes an honest discussion of demographic change impossible. We have seen that. The English exist. The Welsh exist. The Scots exist. The Northern Irish exist. And again, just the fact that he is saying that makes him stand out from all the other politicians. And he's using this term historic peoples rather than ethnicity or race, but that's essentially what they are, the historic peoples of this island. They may come from different nations originally, but they were all brother nations. They were all white nations. I mean, you can visually tell whether somebody is of British ancestry. You can automatically see that. And when they do DNA studies, you can see that people groups cluster together in the DNA study. So it's not just that what you are visually seeing tells you that they are a part of the same group. What DNA tells us is they are a part of the same group. And what he's saying here is because of this immigration problem that we have, and because of citizenship, we have people that may refer to themselves as being Black Irish, for instance, or Black Scots. And what he is saying is, though they may be entitled to say that because they have citizenship, that does not make them a part of the historic population of the English or the Scots, because there are no Black people in the historic population of the English or the Scots, because the historic population was a homogeneous ethnicity. He continues, Britain today contains many citizens whose ancestry lies elsewhere and who are welcome participants in Britain's national life. And of course, again, people jump up, nationalists jump up about that. No, they don't. They're not welcome participants. What he's saying there is the ones that haven't committed any crimes, the ones that have a high proficiency in speaking English, the ones that are working, and the ones who don't have any relatives that are committing any crimes that they have neglected to tell the state about, like the grooming gangs, he's saying they are welcome participants in Britain's national life. And that probably only includes about 10% of the 20% of foreigners that we actually have in the country. So that excludes 50% of them already. And that's halfway there to PA's policy of getting it down to 5%, isn't it? So just because he's saying that some are welcome participants, he's not saying that the grooming gangs are welcome participants or the relatives of the grooming gangs who covered up for them. A serious national policy should be capable of acknowledging all of these realities simultaneously without abuse or unnecessary hysteria. And that's the point of this paper, really. It's what are you going to do about people that have been given citizenship even though they're not actually a part of the historic people that lived in that island? You've got these two different groups. What are we going to do about them? You can't have one law for one group and another law for the other group. So what are we going to do about this? And as I say, I think he's come to some decent conclusions about what should be done about all of this. He says that brings us nicely to our next point, demographic security and demographic continuity. And of course, this is the main thing that Patriotic Alternative talk about, demographics. The white British population is the historic majority population of Britain. Again, very good, because he's using the term white, which politicians never used to do. Britons is the term we will use with that definition attached. So he's saying when he uses the term Briton, that means somebody who is white British. Again, this is very good. I mean, this is something that I've been pointing out for quite a while. I've been saying, well, Brutus is the Trojan prince that gave his name to Britain. And therefore, British means to look like Brutus, doesn't it? And how can you say that somebody black looks like Brutus? They can't. So you can't actually have a black Briton. So that's what he's saying here. The white British population shall be referred to as Britons. And bear in mind, he's also said that because you can have black English, for instance, like David Lammy, although that's not saying that they are part of the historic population of the English. It's just that he happens to be a British citizen that was born in England. Britons is the term we will use with that definition attached. It is reasonable for the population of Britons to care about whether it will remain a predominant and enduring part of the country it has inhabited and shaped over generations. And this is the problem, though, because anybody that is concerned about this and talks about these matters is going to get accused of being racist. to worry that a Britain filled with Afghans, Indians and Somalis would not be a Britain at all. This concern should not automatically be treated as a shameful or racist. Again, I don't see why ethno-nationalists are not happy about this paper, because it is ethno-nationalism that he's talking about. It's just that he's not calling it ethno-nationalism. I think maybe he thinks that ethno-nationalism is neo-Nazism or something like that. He's not breaking down the term into ethnicity and nationalism, because what he's talking about here is preserving the ethnicity. And he's talking about the ethnic group, the British ethnic group, being concerned about their island being filled with Afghans, Indians and Somalis. And he correctly points out this concern should not be automatically treated as shameful or racist. And he's going about telling people how we can discuss these things without being accused of racist, by talking about the historic population, for instance, rather than talking about race. If rapid demographic transformation were occurring among another historic population elsewhere in the world, it would be entirely legitimate to examine what was driving it, whether government policy was accelerating it, and what the consequences might be. And this is similar to what we have happening in Tibet, isn't it, with the Chinese government in Tibet. And a while back, leftists were extremely concerned that the Chinese were replacing the Tibetans with Han Chinese. But of course, they have no concern about Afghans, Somalis and Indians replacing the white British people within their own country. So that's really what he's referring to here, is that if you think about the boot on the other foot, so as to say, then you can understand why people should not be accused of being racist or being concerned about it. He says the same standard should apply to Britain and to Britons. Demographic security is a legitimate subject of democratic politics. And it should be illegal to replace your democratic population with another population of a different ethnic group. It makes a mockery of democracy to do that. And we have no politicians talking about demographic security, that they talk as if that isn't a concern. So again, it's good that he's doing this, because he's putting these concerns that people have into a language that people can use to discuss them. Governments make decisions that influence the future of a country. Immigration levels, settlement policy, and citizenship rules are political choices. Their cumulative demographic consequences cannot simply be dismissed as matters over which the electorate should have no say. And of course, famously, the British people were never asked if they wanted to be replaced. They were never asked if they wanted to have mass immigration. They were never asked if they wanted sub-Saharan Africans to be given passports and told that they were British citizenship. I mean, they're all the most important things to have happened to the country since the end of the Second World War. And the population have never been asked about this. A government, therefore, has a responsibility to consider not only the immediate economic effects of migration, but its effects over decades and generations. Again, this is an ethno-nationalist position. If you're going to import people from different races into the country and give them all citizenship, then a certain number of them are going to intermarry and they're going to have offspring, and the offspring is then effectively going to destroy the ethnic integrity of the original group. And that's the cumulative effect over decades and generations, isn't it? I mean, we can look back in history, we can look at places like Egypt, and we can say, oh, look at all these wonderful pyramids, and look at all these this artwork that they did. Well, they were completely different people that built these pyramids and that left these mummies. And the people that live there now, they're all brown people. And they didn't build any pyramids. So what happened to the Egyptians to cause their civilization to collapse? And what happened to them to turn them into Arabs? Well, the answer is there. It's not a coincidence that both those things happened around about the same time. And if we look back in history at all of our civilizations, they all started out as white civilizations. And then they... because it was a center of civilization, our life was good there. You had Aborigines, peoples of the land, people of these other groups that would come into those countries effectively, and they would be used as servants and labor, and eventually they would be given equal citizenship, because that's the way we are. We're white people, we're charitable people, we try to help others. So the white people effectively made these other groups into equal citizens. They intermarried, and the effect of that was that the next generation were unable to maintain the civilization, because the next generation were no longer the same biological grouping that built the civilization. The only people that can maintain a certain civilization are the people that built that certain civilization. So that's the effect over decades and generations. Now, I don't know if Rupert Lowe is referring to that here, but he is saying it's not only the immediate economic effects of migration, but its effects over decades and generations. He's probably thinking more like the Islamization of society, if you bring in groups with other cultures such as Muslims. Demographic security, he says. So that's what is the concern. And that's not just the economic effects of migration, but its effects over decades and generations. The historic populations of Britain should not be told that they are uniquely forbidden from having any interest in their own demographic future. Britons are allowed to hold those concerns just as anybody else can, just as the Japanese or the Swedish or the Poles do. Well, I'm not so sure he's really looked into this, because the Swedes have the same problems that the British people have. And Swedes that are concerned about their demographic future get accused of being racists as well. They even get outlawed as terrorist organisations by the American government in the case of the Nordic resistance movement. And it's the same with Poles. Even in Japan now, there is a concerted effort to import Muslims, for instance, into Japan, and they're starting to have all similar sort of problems that we have with their shrines being set fire to, in the same way that a lot of churches mysteriously catch fire in France. Wanting continuity between past, present, and future is an entirely Norman human emotion, and it is one that I share. Demographic security, as Restore Britain understands it, is not a demand for ethnic purity. That is not what we stand for, and it never has been. Nor do I accept the attempt to force our politics into the labels of either ethno-nationalism or civic nationalism. Again, people have complained about this, ethnic purity thing. But the fact is, in Britain, it has been made up of different white nations, all brother nations in the first place. And that is effectively bringing in people of other ethnicities, and then they become British. So I think he's quite right to actually say this. He's not saying it's a demand for racial purity, and he'd probably get into even more trouble if he said we demand racial purity. But effectively, when he talks about historic populations and talks about people being able to marry somebody from another country that are already a part of the historic population here, then, I mean, that ensures that you have racial purity. So what are you saying here? We're not either ethno-nationalists or civic nationalists. I mean, I would say he is ethno-nationalist, but he has to tread a fine line. So he's being specific here. It's not a demand for ethnic purity. But that is effectively what... And I mean, you're not actually going to have that. If you strictly think of ethnicities, Britain's never had ethnic purity, because you've had Normans, they were another ethnic group. You've had Saxons, they were another ethnic group. So, I mean, what he's saying there is correct. And it also means that it gives implausible deniability to say that he's not ethno-nationalist and he's not civic nationalist either. He says, neither describes our position, and we do not believe that it is conducive to a healthy political environment for debates to be reduced to simplistic labels and name-calling. Well, he should take his own advice there, really, and not use those labels himself, for instance, when he's asked to deny ethno-nationalist. Perhaps he could say, well, I don't agree with name-calling, so I'm not going to use that. I'm not going to use this label to label my supporters, rather than explicitly condemning ethno-nationalism. Because, I mean, as he's saying here, they're policies are neither ethno-nationalist or civic nationalist. I would say they have elements of both. When you look at the citizenship topics that he's talking about, I would say they're influenced by civic nationalism. And when he talks about historic identities, historic populations, that's influenced by ethno-nationalism. He says, we believe that Britain's historic peoples, our continuity and our inheritance matter. We also believe that British citizenship, once legitimately conferred, establishes a membership of the country and equality before our law. Again, it establishes membership of the country. It doesn't establish membership of the historic people group. And he cannot be accused here of trying to take away somebody's rights either. He's saying we have these two distinct groups. You have British citizens and you have the British historic peoples. And although the British historic peoples are also all British citizens, not all British citizens are part of Britain's historic peoples. He says those principles are not contradictory. Britain has never been frozen in time and its population has never been entirely homogenous, certainly not over the last century. And again, I mean, if you're talking about ethnicity, then Britain has never been homogenous because you have had different ethnicities coming here, but they have all been part of the same brother nations. They've all been part of the same racial group. Where he says certainly not over the last century, that's because over the last century, we have not just had different ethnic groups coming in. We've had different races entirely coming in. So he is really correct to say this. But to understand that, you have to have an understanding of the difference between ethnicity and race. He says, suggesting otherwise is not grounded in reality. And of course, people have been attacking him for this on Twitter, but I think what he's saying there is accurate. He says, we are instead concerned with continuity, whether historic communities of Britons can survive across generations, whether their cultures and institutions remain intact, whether the pace of population change permits any appropriate level of integration, and whether political decisions are delivering transformations for which the electorate was never asked to give meaningful consent. In fact, we voted against the mass immigration experiment time and time again. So what he's saying here, what are they concerned with continuity? They're concerned with the historic communities of Britain and whether they can survive across generations. Well, that is effectively the 14 words, isn't it? We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. I mean, that's exactly what he's saying he wants to do there, but he's not using that terminology to do that. He's not using racial terminology, not even using ethnic terminology. He's calling them the historic communities of Britons. Will they survive across generations? So the people that are saying, oh, well, he's saying that Britain was never homogenous. I'm going to leave the party. Well, if you continue looking at the next paragraph, he's talking about historic communities of Britons and how they need to survive across generations. And he's making it quite clear that when he talks about homogenous, he means one ethnic group. Not a mix of different ethnic groups, which is what Britain is. It is made up of different, the British people are made up of different ethnic groups. They're not made up of different races, but they are made up of different ethnic groups. He says, essentially, whether we can restore our high trust society. Well, of course, the only way you can restore a high trust society is if you go back to all being one racial group. Then you can have your high trust society. Over the last few decades, the answer has quite evidently been not. If the demographic character of a community changes profoundly within a generation, Britons are entitled to ask why. We are entitled to question it, and we are certainly entitled to democratically resist it. Of course, the problem is, when you have diversity, when you have multiculturalism, then you can no longer have a high trust society. People no longer trust their neighbours. I mean, this has been known for decades now. There was a huge study that was done on it, UN study, called The Dangers of Diversity by Robert Putnam. And it said that when you have multiculturalism and you have these different ethnic groups, not only do you not trust the other ethnic group, but you no longer trust your own group. So that the high trust society just goes, and all that goes along with that. Civic engagement, everything. And the reason why that is because there is then another group there for other members of your group to conspire with. If you don't have that other group there, there is no possibility of your neighbour conspiring with another group against your group. That's the reason why you lose the high trust society when you bring another group in. He says the pace of change is unacceptable. Walk around any major city, even smaller towns, it is evident, and denying that solves nothing. Islamic populations in particular on current birth rates will grow and grow and grow. Colonization is a word that has been used, and I entirely agree. Islamic colonization. And of course, this is exactly what the civic nationalists are most concerned about, is Islamism. He says that is exactly what has happened to large parts of our country, and I will certainly not apologise for outlining the scale of the crisis and how we will tackle it. A restored British government will reverse the Islamification of Britain. To see whole classrooms in East London or Bradford without a single white child, almost entire schools, to say I am remotely comfortable with that would be a lie. The white British are projected to become a minority in our own country, our own home. It has already happened in many towns and cities across Britain. Nothing demonstrates the demographic vandalism of mass immigration more than that projection. We will not allow it to happen, and our stated immigration aims will not allow that to happen. I mean, just reading that, how can people then resign their Restore Party membership and say, oh, this party's no good? I mean, they just stated they're not going to allow the white British to become a minority in our own country. And they're using the term white British to describe the British people. You don't see any other mainstream politician talking about that. A Restore Britain government will make demographic impact an explicit consideration as it relates to immigration policy. We will collect and publish objective demographic information and permit that evidence to be discussed openly. Now, of course, there's a current scandal at the moment. The British government have been told that they, by the courts, that they have to publish the crime data as it relates to ethnicity. And David Lammy, under the former administration, and Keir Starmer, was refusing to do so. He was refusing to let the public see the crime data as it relates to ethnicity. And I think that's what is being referred to here. They want to see demographic information, and we want it to be discussed. He says, we should be able to examine migration, settlement, citizenship, religion, fertility, language, geographic concentration, and long-term population projections without either exaggerating what the figures show or suppressing them because their implications are politically uncomfortable for the establishment that enabled the change to begin with. And that last sentence there is to do with David Lammy, I think. We will publish all and any internal Home Office projections, reports or estimates relating to demographic change so that the British people can judge for themselves what has been inflicted on the historic population. We don't really need to see these studies. I mean, we can already see that our capital city, London, for instance, is 60% non-white now and only 40% white British. We can see what's happened because of this demographic vandalism. He says, we can maintain two principles perfectly simultaneously. The continued flourishing of Britain's historic peoples, Britons, and equal citizenship belonging. So two things there, British historic peoples and citizenship. Citizenship is the only legal boundary that can work, and it should work. It will work with Restore Britain's radical overhaul of how citizenships are conferred and maintained. So he's trying to please everybody here. But that does not require us to pretend that every citizen has precisely the same historical relationship with Britain. There is a meaningful distinction between somebody whose family has been rooted in this country across many generations and somebody who has only recently acquired citizenship, particularly through our majorly defective system. Having at least one British-born parent represents a tangible intergenerational connection to this country that a Restore Britain government will legitimately recognise in appropriate areas of national policy. So to say that somebody, to define somebody as being a Briton, they will have to have at least one British-born parent, which, of course, does mean that you would have some non-whites that were here from quite a while back. But is that saying that they will actually be a part of, defined as part of the historical population group? I don't think that is actually what he is saying there, because he's talking about citizenship. He's saying in order to make, we will make a distinction between somebody who has only just arrived and somebody whose family may be here, may have been here for a bit longer. He says this would not make British citizens any less equal before the law. There is a vital difference between equal treatment and identical treatment. Already in Britain, only the young are entitled to free education and only the old are entitled to claim their pensions. All sensible societies find ways of contending with the fact that the individuals who make up that society are different in consequential ways. When it comes to day-to-day management of the nation's limited resources, therefore, we have no choice but to prioritise and deprioritise in ways that take into account these very differences. In fact, our welfare, education and health systems already do so in certain respects. And I think that's a very good paragraph, that equal treatment is not the same as identical treatment. So long as you are keeping people equal under the law, you could be treating them, differently. You could be saying, well, somebody who has only just arrived here, for instance, all the same laws apply to them, but they're not allowed to vote. Why should they be able to have a say in how the British people govern their own homeland? They should have no say in it. They're equal under the law because they're a British citizen, but they're not treated identically because they're not given the right to have a say in the parliament. And of course, this is something that Restore Britain have spoken about in the past. They've said that you shouldn't have any people of foreign ancestry that are politicians in the British government. He says, as far as we at Restore Britain are concerned, to be treated equally before the law, as every British citizen should be, is not the same as being treated identically as a matter of public policy. There is nothing contradictory about those principles. And of course, this is something that has been established by the left anyway, is that they can treat people, don't have to treat people identically. They can, for instance, they can say no white people need to apply for this job or to get into this university because we're only looking for ethnic minorities. So it's already been established that you can do that. And apparently that's not discriminating against people. So there shouldn't be any problem with treating people differently, although they're equal before the law. Because it, as it's been pointed out here, we already do that with the young and the old, and the left or already do that according to this Equality Act of Tony Blair's that states that everybody has to be promoting diversity. Of course, Restore have said that they will reverse Tony Blair's Equality Act and also the Public Order Act, the parts that prevent people from talking about these subjects. Anyway, I think we will leave it there for today. We are now on page 7 of this, and we will get back to it tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.